Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas, with your neon flashing and your one-armed bandits crashing all those haunts down the drain.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. He called himself Doc Pomus, and he wrote some of the most popular songs of the 1950s and 60s. Songs like Viva Las Vegas, Save the Last Dance for Me, and This Magic Moment. But a new documentary called AKA Doc Pomus aims to share the story of the man behind the hits, a disabled Brooklyn songwriter who succeeded in the music industry against all odds. I'm joined here in the studio today by one of the film's directors, Peter Miller. Peter, welcome.
Nice to be here.
And the film's producer, Sharon Felder, who is also Doc Pomus' daughter. Sharon, welcome to you.
Thanks, John.
Your father was the ultimate outsider, in a sense. Born a Jewish kid in Brooklyn, paralyzed by polio as a kid. The story of how he managed to enter the music industry, it almost reads like fiction, doesn't it?
It was stranger than fiction, actually. I don't think you could have invented his life. He was about a 17-year-old kid that wanted to be a blues singer. I mean, a Jewish crippled kid in Brooklyn listening to the radio, and got himself to a club in Lower Manhattan and convinced people that he was a blues singer and got up on a stage and he could wail.
Yeah. Peter, how hard was it to find, you know, photos, clips, recordings, you know, all the sort of archival material? Because we're going back, like, to the, what, late 40s, early 50s at this point?
Well, we were blessed to have a wonderful relationship with Sharon and her family, who have collected massive amounts of stuff about Doc's life. But it's always hard to find archival materials going back that far. And Doc is not a household name.
Right.
It's not like there's, you know, massive amounts of images out there of him. Most people, when you say Doc Pomus, they vaguely have heard of this. Maybe they saw it on a record label. But Doc Pomus is behind the scenes. He's a songwriter.
Mm-hmm. And the name Doc Pomus, Sharon, why does he come up with a stage name?
Well, you know, he's born Jerome Solon Felder. At some point, there's so many different stories as to how he became Doc Pomus, but he sort of invented it. He thought it sounded like a hip midnight character. That's what he always told me.
Mm-hmm.
And he just really liked the sound of it. He played around with a lot of names. One of the stories he said was that Doc was named after Dr. Clayton, a blues singer that he liked.
Right.
But I think he just really liked that he sounded kind of a hip name.
Yeah. But Peter, there was another reason why he needed a stage name, right?
Well, he was sneaking out and going to these nightclubs, and he was singing the blues, and I don't think his mom liked that idea, and he wanted to hide it from her.
Right. So he didn't want his name splashed up outside the clubs where his mom might see it.
After a while, that became something that he couldn't avoid because he did pretty well.
But in the 1940s and early 50s, Doc Pomus is out there, and he's actually making it. I mean, he's making these records. They're not million sellers or anything, but he's recording as a blues singer.
Well, roll a boogie, roll it good and strong. Well, roll a boogie, roll it good and strong. Well, roll it, boys, and I know we can't go wrong. We'll jump till the break of day. We'll jump till the break of day. We'll drive our blues away. So let's get groovy, make your chick boogie too. So let's get groovy, make your chick boogie too. Then she'll feel it when we're through.
That is Doc Pomus and Doc's Boogie. The young Doc Pomus trying to make it as a kind of, as a blues singer in the clubs here in New York. Got a couple of sides recorded. Peter, you tell a story somewhat early in the movie, a.k.a. Doc Pomus, about, is it RCA that actually buys one of his recordings and then when they realize what they've got, decides not to release it?
Yeah, he had a wonderful song called Heartlessly, and it could be a hit. I mean, people love this song, and Alan Freed is pushing this song.
The famous DJ.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this could have been an early rock and roll hit, but I don't think the people at the record company thought that there was a lot of possibility for a disabled Jewish kid in his early 30s. This was not the kind of rock star that they had in mind.
So maybe it was not meant to be that he would be a singer. Did he regret that? I mean, he goes on to become this amazingly famous and successful songwriter. Did he ever express to you, Sharon, any regrets that he didn't get to pursue that part of his career?
I think he had a deep passion for singing, and I think on some level he must have regretted it, but he really closed that door. And once he did that, he put all his energies into writing.
Right. Now, how did that transition happen?
Well, rock and roll is beginning to happen, and there's a need for people to write songs for these up-and-coming artists. I mean, Doc had a relationship with the people at Atlantic Records, the fantastic R&B label, and he's writing songs for people like Ray Charles and Big Joe Turner and others. But there's this new form of music that's happening. There's people who are coming up who need songs, and Doc's got this real aptitude for writing these songs in this new genre. And he starts writing for young rock and roll musicians. He teams up with a younger person who he meets named Mort Schumann, and they create some of the early hits of rock and roll.
So Doc at this point is probably, what, in his mid-30s?
Mid-30s, but if I could just backtrack for 1 second, in that he was always writing songs from the time he was singing.
So that Doc's Boogie that we heard.
Yeah,
for example,
he wrote all this stuff that he sang, and his musicians originally were like Mickey Baker, King Curtis. He had the most smoking band, and so he was signed to Atlantic, and he wrote for Ruth Brown, Ray Charles. He wrote Lonely Avenue, all those great songs way before he met Mort Schumann, mm-hmm. and then was signed.
So 1956, he writes Lonely Avenue for Ray Charles. Was this his first like real hit?
Absolutely, and I think that's his favorite.
Now my room has got 2 windows, but the sunshine never comes through. You know it's always dark and dreary since I broke off, baby.
'56 hit for Ray Charles called Lonely Avenue. It was written by Doc Pomus, the subject of the new film called AKA Doc Pomus. Opens on Friday at the Village East Cinema here in New York, and then later in L.A. and elsewhere. We're speaking with Peter Miller, co-director of the film, and Sharon Felder, Doc Pomus's daughter and producer of the movie. Lonely Avenue, just that title, Peter. You talk a little bit about this in the film, that he's walking around. At this point, he wasn't yet completely confined to a wheelchair, but still, the braces and, the polio, the disability. He feels what he's writing in these songs.
Well, Doc would probably have said that he was writing songs just to write songs because he was an artist, a craftsman. He was a songwriter. But it's hard to escape the fact that so many of his songs are in many ways autobiographical. And one of the things that we were able to do in this movie was to connect those songs to his life story. Our wonderful film editor, Amy Linton, would weave these songs into his story. And Doc might have said, no, I was just writing songs. Hmm. But Lonely Avenue, man, that speaks to what he must have been going through and the kind of life he was living.
Now, Sharon, you're familiar with the Lonely Avenue record that Ben Folds did with the English writer Nick Hornby?
Oh, yeah. I was blown away when I discovered that one day. I went to their book signing, and we had a great time together. Yeah.
There's a song on the record called Doc Pomus.
It's crazy. I know. That just blew me away. Yeah. And they talk in the song, if I recall, the lyrics go something like, man in a wheelchair and sitting in the lobby of the Forest Hotel where my dad held court. And it was pretty, that just was so funny.
Yeah.
Moving.
Soundcheck listeners, you can find a session with Nick Hornby and Ben Folds from the Lonely Avenue, when the Lonely Avenue album came out, on our website at soundcheck.org. The whole idea, though, of Doc Pomus as this lonely guy stuck in his wheelchair, he never lacked for female companionship, is the impression that you get as the film goes on.
It's, my whole life, you know, my father always had, my mother's very beautiful. The significant woman in his life was very beautiful, Shirley Hauser, for many, many years, and always had beautiful girlfriends prior and after both of those women. And I think it was the blues that he was emoting. And so Lonely Avenue is a blues, and he always felt that. But he was also a very joyous and hilariously funny person.
So when you say he was holding court there in the hotel lobby, I mean, people were just
drawn to
him. Seems to have had some kind of magnetism.
Oh, he drew everybody in. You know, the prostitutes, the comedians, whoever was hanging out. The Forest was an amazing hotel. And everybody from Johnny Carson would bring a hooker there to, you know, Rodney Dangerfield kept a room there, and then Phil Spector. So it was really, you know, a place that everybody hung out in the lobby.
Was it a place for a kid?
Oh, yeah. I spent a lot of time there as a kid, and I loved it. And I would be babysat by the elevator operator from the Hotel Ozzy. And as a matter of fact, Peter Guralnick wants me to do a book of my adventures at the Forest.
Peter Guralnick is one of the interviewees that we hear from a lot.
Peter Guralnick, the amazing music writer. And I have to say that one of the things about Doc's magnetism is he drew people into his life who are some of the most articulate, soulful, brilliant people I've ever had the pleasure of interviewing. I think Doc created a kind of solar system around himself, which was just extraordinary, full of some of the most amazing people.
Mm-hmm. And so we get to hear from Joan Osborne and Lou Reed and Benny King, with whom Doc Pomus has an early and very, very productive relationship. Tell us about, Sharon, tell us about this magic moment.
Well, my dad was signed, you know, with Mort Schumann. They wrote so many amazing songs for the Drifters. This Magic Moment, Save the Last Dance for Me, I Count the Tears, Sweets for My Sweets. And Benny King was just the perfect voice. Well, see, actually, Benny was with a group called the Crowns. And my dad found them, signed them, and then that became the Drifters.
Hmm.
And the vocal of Ben is just about as beautiful as it gets.
Great song from 1960 by Doc Pomus, sung by the Drifters featuring Benny King.
This magic moment, so different and so new, was like any other until I kiss you, and then it happened. It took me by surprise. By the look in your eyes, sweeter than wine, softer than the summer night. Everything I want I have, whenever I hold you tight. This magic moment, while your lips are close to mine, will last forever.
Drifters and This Magic Moment, a song from the magic pen of Doc Pomus and Mort Schumann. Can we assign lyrics to one, music to the other, or is that not how they worked?
Originally, my dad did both. Then, when he started to work with Mort Schumann, Mort had never written before. He was a young kid who was my dad's cousin's young friend, an 18-year-old. And he sort of trained him. He had him in a room. And slowly, through osmosis, I suppose, he absorbed how to do it more and more. And so then they eventually assigned 50-50, but it kind of overlapped always. And so my dad would throw a melody line, Mort would throw a lyric. But essentially, he was a lyricist towards his later years, and mm-hmm. Mort did the music.
We're speaking with Sharon Felder, the producer of the film, a.k.a. Doc Pomus, and daughter of the late songwriter. Peter Miller is co-director of the film, a.k.a. Doc Pomus. Opening Friday at the Village East Cinema here in New York, and then in L.A. next week and elsewhere after that. So he's got this incredible run of songs. He's got this great songwriting partner in Mort Shuman. He's got this beautiful wife in Willie Burke, Sharon, your mom. And then it all falls apart. The marriage dissolves. Mort moves to, is it France, to become a singer. And then what happens to the song? There's like a sea change in the music world, right, Peter?
Well, at some point in the mid-60s, Bob Dylan is writing songs, the Beatles are writing songs, and the need for a songwriter, for the Brill Building, this building full of wonderful, brilliant songwriters crafting songs for singers, kind of fades away a little bit. People expect that the singers should be writing their own song. And what role is there for Doc Pomus, extraordinary songwriter? He can't really make a living anymore. And so for about 10 years in his life, he turns to card playing, to gambling, and he's very good at it. And he actually makes a living and supports his family through poker.
And there's a really neat little clip of Doc Pomus. This is archival footage that you got for the film, talking about that moment in his life.
Well, I always felt that writing songs was like gambling to me, you know, it's a different kind of gambling. Deep inside my soul, I felt that I wasn't destined to be a winner, you know, and if I overcame the odds, I would have a shot at the card game. So it was kind of an extension of my life, you know, playing cards.
And there's like card sharks talking about how they heard about the game. You know, if there was a good game, you would hear about it. And Doc Pomus was running a good game. And
John, it was hardcore.
Now, Sharon, how much did you see of your father around this time?
Oh, I lived with my father during this time. So it was basically myself and Shirley living in a two-room apartment. And I was in high school. So I would buy the food for the card game. I would get the cash from the loan shark down the street. We'd stock up on cold cuts, like bags of cigarettes, and then he'd have somebody at the door with a gun that, you know, had to protect the game, and then there'd be like a girl with a cocktail waitress apron that would serve the players, and it was super Sopranos hardcore situation.
So he was he the house?
Yeah, so it was in the apartment.
He was making money no matter what
exactly
was happening.
We had to, he needed to have some sort of steady income.
Right. And how was his health at this point?
He was just, he smoked and he was overweight. But otherwise, he was highly functioning in mm-hmm. every other way.
Right.
In a wheelchair, you know, from polio.
Now, so at some point, he comes out of this decline. He's got the second girlfriend, and he starts this songwriting workshop. And lo and behold, all these people show up, you know, Sean Colvin, Joan Osborne.
Dozens of people come to his workshops and learn the art of songwriting. And here's a guy who's one of the greatest songwriters in the world, and he's giving songwriting lessons to young songwriters. And so, you know, it was amazing to talk to Joan Osborne, who's had a, you know, stellar career, who learned songwriting at a Doc Pomus songwriting workshop. And he brought in the greatest peers to teach these workshops, Lou Reed, Tom Waits. I mean,
Otis Blackwell.
I mean, these are the greatest songwriters around, teaching young, sharing their knowledge. And this is part of who Doc was. He was a person who was a generous, big-hearted soul.
Mm-hmm. His legacy exists in all of these songs that we know and many that we don't. I was unfamiliar with the Willie DeVille. I mean, I was a big Mink DeVille fan in the early days. And to find that Doc Pomus had worked with Willie was like, oh, Will, I didn't know that.
I babysat for Will. I used to babysit for his kids.
It's a long, illustrious career and a remarkable life behind it, documented in the new film called A.K.A. Doc Pomus. We've been speaking with the co-director, Peter Miller, and Sharon Felder, the producer of the film and daughter of Doc Pomus. The movie opens Friday at Village East Cinema in New York, elsewhere next week. Thank you both for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.